new topic, loop quantum cosmology. The speaker is Tomasz Pawłowski from Penn State.
Thank you. First of all, I would like to say that it's a pleasure to be here with you, and I'm very happy to be able to give a talk. The topic is loop quantum cosmology. So let me start with the information, what it really is. So loop quantum cosmology is an application of loop quantum gravity methods introduced so nicely by Thomas Thiemann during his lecture to usually very highly symmetry reduced models, usually to cosmological models. However, it's not the only application. For example, it's possible to describe interiors of symmetric black holes using these formalisms. So entire approach was started by Martin Boyewald in 1999. Since that time, it was quite extensively developed. And some kind of keystone is the paper by Ashtekar, Boyewald, and Lewandowski, in which precise mathematical structure was given to this approach. It's used so far. So first of all, why we want to stick to symmetry-reduced model instead of working in full loop quantum gravity? As it was presented by Thomas Thiemann, the construction of physical Hilbert space and Dirac observables explicitly is extremely difficult in full theory. To best of my knowledge, the entire program wasn't yet completed, so if we don't want any approximations, we have so far, we don't have any tools to really exactly extract the physics. So we hope that this program can be completed in some kind of simplified models. In particular, we can exactly choose cosmological models to try to complete this program. I think there is something wrong with the size of the screen. Wybierz to menu. Wybierz menu. Pinek. Wybierz menu. Up, down. Problem with this approach is that it's not really a symmetric sector of full theory. It's not derived from full quantum gravity. Only its methods are applied to some, say, cosmological models. The relation between LQC and full theory is still the topic which is under investigation. I know that, for example, people which are present in the audience, for example, Jonathan Engel extensively works on this relation. Some answers, however, can be asked already at this level, and we can at least heuristically believe its results. For example, if we ask about the existence of singularities, there is something called BKL conjecture, in which according to which in classical general relativity, special derivatives of metric become less and less important as one approaches the singularity. Of course, one has to do it using appropriate choice of slices. But then, as you approach singularity, spacetime becomes more and more homogeneous. Therefore, the questions regarding explicitly singularity can be answered using the homogeneous models. So what kind of problems we hope to solve using this approach? First of all, we can ask exactly about the presence of the singularities. In classical GR, we know that singularities are real boundaries of space-time, by which evolution, the equations of motion cannot provide the evolution, and the physics stops. So on the other hand, the singularities correspond to some infinite gravitational fields, or for example, matter energy densities. For large curvatures and energy densities, we believe that some quantum effects are supposed to take over. Therefore, classical GR shouldn't be applicable there. So we hope that quantum theory can remove the singularities. Second problem is so-called problem of time, which was already discussed by Thomas Thiemann and also during the discussion by Professor Carlo Rovelli. Problem is that both classical and quantum GR is in fact a constrained system. All Dirac observables have to be time independent, and we don't have any external time to even phrase the evolution. Therefore, we may ask whether we can extract one of variables, one of parameters, which could serve as some kind of internal time and provide good independent variable to describe the evolution. Also, whenever we construct any quantum theory, we have to ask whether we can construct the framework which solves the problem of singularities, but at large scales agrees with classical GR. Okay. So all the perturbative approaches, of course, are very good in satisfying the second requirement, because by the definition, we start from correct semi-classical origin. However, usually they cannot resolve the singularities. They share the problems of classical GR. On the other hand, for example, loop quantum gravity is non-perturbative approach. Therefore, the question whether there exists sufficiently large semi-classical sector is very non-trivial question. And we'll try to answer this question in context of symmetry reduced model. In particular, in general, we need to ask whether the theory the specific LQC cures the problems of classical GR while retaining correct classical limit. If this is satisfied, we can ask how close to the classical singularity the behavior of quantum system is still well approximated by the classical theory. In other words, how close to the singularity we can still rely on classical GR. Also, how the dynamics is modified near this classical singularity. Is it at all resolved? Does the evolution, in particular equations of motions, remain deterministic at the region corresponding to classical singularity? And if yes, what is on the other side of the quantum region which replaced our singularity? These particular questions I will answer for the specific cosmological model which corresponds to flat or spherical isotropic universe admitting massless scalar field. So these results were published in the following papers. So let me start with some outline. First of all, I will remind quickly the classical theory and in particular define the reduced form of Ashlecker variables which will be used for quantization. Next, I will introduce the specific kinematics of loop quantum cosmology, which is the consequence of symmetry reduction, in particular focusing on the form of Hamiltonian constraint. Once this will be done, I will start to describe flat Robertson-Walker model with a scalar field. And in particular, it will be possible to define emergent time and evolution operator there, define the Dirac observables, and analyze the dynamics. If the time of the lecture will allow, I will talk also about the spherical model. So first of all, from the very beginning, the isotropic cosmological space-time is usually manifold, some m times real line, where m is in fact diffeomorphic to R3 in a flat model. In a closed case, it will be three sphere. Once the system is isotropic, it's possible to write the form metric, space-time form metric, in the following form. This is just standard cosmic time. T is the cosmic time, and this is the part which in line element corresponds to minus dt squared. A of t is some scale factor, which depends only on time. And this is pullback of some unit fiducial flat metric it's just a pullback of 3D dimensional flat metric given which line element can be given, for example, by this Cartesian coordinates. Here we have to take into account that we have already the first difference compared to full loop quantum gravity, because choice of that form of metric means that we already fix some gauge. Therefore, we no longer work in diffeomorphic classes of the metrics. We will work with specific metric. Also, the existence of this fiducial metric provides some background structure, which wasn't present in full theory. So additional object which will be extensively used is just some constant orthonormal triad and cotriad associated with our fiducial metric. Let me remind just what are the Ashlecker variables here. In full theory, A, EI, A is standard SU2 connection. EAI is some orthonormal triad with density wave 1. Now we assume that both of these variables are subject to symmetries. So we consider the space of homogeneous and isotropic connections and triads, where in case of connection, the symmetry means that connection is left invariant by diffeomorphism up to SU2 gauge transformations. Then within each gauge equivalence class of pair connection triad, which satisfies Gauss and diffeomorphism constraint, there is a unique element which is of the form, I need to rewrite it. AIA equal to C tilde omega naught IA, and triad is equivalent to P tilde square root of determinant of Q and fiducial triad element. Now, this is our background structure. All the information about the triads and connections is encoded in these two parameters, C tilde and P tilde. These will be our new canonical variables. And we have to remember that they are defined globally. These are not any local functions depending on the point. Due to homogeneity and isotropy, they are given, they are constant for the entire slice. Now we have a little bit of a problem, because any object like action, symplectic form, even Hamiltonian constraint are usually integrals over some densities over the entire homogeneous slice. In flat model, this slice is just R3, it's infinite. Also, we don't have any follow conditions because of homogeneities. Therefore, any such object will be infinite. So we have to deal with this somehow. To deal with this, we observe that if we take some fiducial cell chosen on this homogeneous slice, and restrict all the integration to this cell, then in classical theory, the resulting equations of motion will be identical to standard Friedman equations, which can be derived directly from standard action as symmetry reduction to Einstein field equations. We have to be a little bit careful here, because our cell is some kind of the regulator. Therefore, at the end of the program, we have to make sure that none of physical results depend on this particular choice. Okay. So, if we have canonical variables, we need to ask what is the Poisson bracket between them. So from the full theory, we have the value of the following Poisson bracket. And from here, and exactly from this form, it's very easy to calculate Poisson bracket, which will be then equal to 8 pi g gamma over 3 V naught, where V naught is a kinematical volume of fiducial triad which was chosen. It would be good, however, to remove somehow the dependence of this volume from our considerations. Therefore, we rescale variables the following way. We multiply C tilde by V naught to 1/3 and P tilde by V naught to power 2/3. In consequence, Poisson bracket, this tilde shouldn't be here. That's Poisson bracket between C and P will be equal just to 8 pi g gamma over 3. Now let's look at the classical Hamiltonian constraint. Since we already explicitly chosen specific form of the connections and triad, they already automatically satisfy the Gauss and diffeomorphism constraint. Therefore, Hamiltonian constraint is the only non-trivial constraint which is left. In consequence, we don't have to worry about the commutation relations between other constraints, so we don't have to really apply the master constraint program in this particular case. We can just consider simply the Hamiltonian constraint. It was already defined during Professor Timman lecture. So it consists of two components. One called Euclidean, which contains triads and object which is called field strength operator, and this is just curvature of connection A. And Lorentzian part, which contains again triads and exterior curvature. What is important is that using the definition of Ashtekar connection, A is equal to gamma plus Barbero-Mirzi parameter times exterior curvature, we can express this second term in terms of field strength and curvature of spin connection gamma. These are the definitions, and we have to remember that in since we work in homogeneous system, these are zero. Then it's very easy to see that entire Lorentzian part is given by difference of, again, product similar to Euclidean part plus product of triads with curvature of spin connection, which, since we work in flat system, our homogeneous slice is just flat real R3 surface, this is equal to zero. This vanishes. In consequence, if we compare these two expressions, we see that a gravitational part of the constraint can be simply expressed as minus 1 over gamma squared, where gamma is Barbero-Mirzi parameter, of product of triads and field strength operator divided by the square root of determinant of E. As we discussed one page earlier, M can be replaced by the fiducial cell. So all these integrals will be finite right now. Yeah, so this is unit completely anti-symmetric form right here, right? It's standard. As I talked, as I presented it page earlier, we can just take the classical theory. In standard cosmology, we develop, we derive the Einstein field equations. Then we symmetry reduce them to the isotropic case, and then what we obtain are the standard Friedmann equations. Then we can start from a little bit different situation. Take action or the Hamiltonian constraint, restrict the symmetry reduced it, restrict the integration to some fiducial cell, calculate, still in classical theory, equations of motion from it, and compare with standard cosmological equations. For large class of the spacetimes, they will agree. These are so-called Bianchi A-type spacetimes.
So you mean that you compare it to classical level?
Yeah, that's right.
Mm-hmm. It's okay, yeah?
That's right. Okay, once we have classical Hamiltonian constraint, we need to look at the kinematics of loop quantum cosmology. And here we just proceed exactly the same way which was successfully applied in full theory. First of all, let us note that holonomies along integral curves of fiducial triads are sufficient to separate homogeneous and isotropic connections. So the only graphs which we need will be just straight edges along E naught A. No, the holonomy along the edge of this direction, of direction corresponding to one of the triad vectors, and of the length lambda times volume of fiducial cell to 1/3, is given as follows. We have to remember that holonomy was given as exponent of integral of A. Since A is constant right now because of homogeneity and isotropy, this integral will be extremely simple, and it's exactly given by this formula. It's cosine of lambda c, where c is parameter encoding the connection, over 2 times identity 2 by 2 matrix, plus 2 sine lambda c by 2 times some tau matrices, which are related to Pauli matrices by the following formula. So we see that these are cosine and sine functions, therefore they can be described as sums and differences of exponent functions, of functions like this. Therefore, an equivalent of holonomy algebra of full LQG here is generated just by these Armos periodic functions, exponent of I lambda c by 2. Now, following the full loop quantum gravity, we can calculate the, we can attempt to find the Gelfand spectrum of this algebra, which will be analog of A bar in full theory. And it happens to be so-called Bohr compactification of the real line. So just to show how we can think about the Bohr compactification, we can think about it as some space of almost periodic function equipped with the following product. Product of two functions will be the limit of some parameter going to infinity, parameter L, 1 over 2 L, and integral between minus L and L of complex conjugate of one function times another function. our basic operators will be the operator corresponding to triad component and operator corresponding to the almost periodic functions. What we really need, what else we need? In full quantum gravity, there is uniqueness theorem, which says that there is an unique state on the algebra, which is positive definite linear, some positive definite linear function. Here we have some analog of this uniqueness theorem, and in this case, this unique state is given by the action of it on the operators corresponding to almost periodic functions, which action on n lambda is just delta lambda with zero, and action on the triad operator is equal to zero. Then standard GNS construction leads to gravitational kinematical Hilbert space, which will be exactly the space of square integrable function on Bohr compactification with standard Haar measure on the compactification. Okay, so this is just the very quick description of Bohr compactification, and now we have to choose some particular representation which will be more convenient to work with. We choose the one in which the operator, the triad operator, is diagonal. Eigenstates of it will be labeled by the label mu, and following from this product, they are normalized with respect to Kronecker delta, not Dirac delta. This is the main difference in comparison, for example, to standard Schrödinger representation, in which we have just Hilbert space is just square integrable space of square integrable functions on the standard real line. So how these operators act on chosen states? Since we chosen to work with representation in which P is diagonal, the action of triad operator is simple. It is just some constant, fundamental constant, times mu times the state. So this constant is 4 divided by 3 pi Barberi Mirzi parameter times Planck length square. Yeah? Excuse me? It's entire real line. Mu can take all of the real values. Yes. Second operator will be operator corresponding to our almost periodic functions, which when acting on eigenstate of P, labeled by mu, is just shift operator. Okay, so, that was Kronecker delta. It is discrete. Okay, in the sense that it's normalized. However, one has to remember that mu can take all the real values. So it's not the situation where when mu can take only when the set of possible values of mu is discrete. It is continuous.
So it's connected with this discrete, I mean, taking this small cell instead of full manifold, huh?
Not really. This is just the result of taking the LQG construction when we start with Gelfand spectrum and GNS construction. Then this is why we end up in Borg compactification, and this is just the scalar product, which is consequence of particular measure on the Borg compactification. Okay, as I said previously, particular choice of the triads and connections by this particular choice of triads and connections, we satisfy both Gauss and diffeomorphism constraint. So the Hamiltonian constraint is the only one which is left. Now we have to quantize it. And how we do it? First of all, let me remind that it contained sort of two terms. Product of triads divided by the square root of determinant of triads times field strength operator. For the first term, the product of triads, we can use so-called Tiemann trick, the method of expression of such objects by holonomies and Poisson brackets of these holonomies with volume operator, which was presented by Professor Tiemann a few lectures ago. So this product will be just the sum over some k of sine of the triad component p divided by 2 pi gamma g lambda, which encodes the length of the edge along which we calculate the holonomy. Then fiducial epsilon of over these space indexes, epsilon ABC, fiducial cotriad element, and then trace of holonomy times Poisson bracket of inverted, the same holonomy but inverted, with volume. So that's one of the components. With field strength operator, we'll have a little bit more problems. One of the standard methods, which I suppose was also presented during Professor Tiemann lecture, and which follows from, I suppose, Young-Mills theory, is that we again can sort of approximate field strength operator by the holonomies, which are calculated along some closed loop. In this case, since we have straight edges, we construct some square loop. Particular form, I have to say that this is not exact formula. It contains some higher order terms, which I just neglected. okay, since we have limit of the area of the loop going to zero, this is some exact formula. Once we drop the limit, there will be some corrections. So classically, Filstrom operator is can be expressed as the limit of holonomies over square loop minus 1 times appropriate cotriad elements divided by the area of the loop which is enclosed. So we take holonomies along closed loop and divide the expression by its area. And limit with the area going to zero will give us the field strength. The exact definition of this holonomy is here. So it's exactly, we are taking holonomy along one edge, then second, then again over third, which will be just holonomy to minus one, inverted holonomy, and inverted second holonomy. Problem is that since we started with, since we are going to follow full loop quantum gravity, we know that limit of the area of the loop going to zero doesn't exist. We know that the spectrum of area operator in full theory is discrete. In particular, the lowest non-zero eigenvalue of this operator is well separated from zero. In consequence, what we can do here, instead of taking the limit to zero, we can take the smaller the loop of the smallest possible area provided by the full theory. So here I denoted this smallest non-zero eigenvalue by delta. And relation between edge length and this area is as follows, is lambda square, where lambda was the edge length, scaled by volume of fiducial cell, it should be V0 to pi 1/3. This should be equal to delta. So let me explain it a little bit. What we have here is no longer the kinematical area. It's a physical area. We had our line element equal to minus dt square plus a square some d sigma, where the sigma naught was just the x square plus the y square plus the z square. And now we see that what will be any fiducial length, area, or volume has to take into account the scale factor. Because this is exactly the metric line element of the line element corresponding to metric induced on the three-dimensional homogeneous slice. In other words, metric induced on the slice is a square of t times our fiducial unit metric. And the physical area has to be calculated with respect to this one. Also, if we look how the physical triads look in comparison with the fiducial ones, we'll see that this is exactly the physical triad, physical orthonormal triad, orthonormal with respect to this metric. Therefore, A square is given, is just absolute value of P. That's why we have P here. I think so. It's